Welcome to the Faith Trends Podcast, conversations that connect research with ministry.
Welcome to the Faith Today Podcast. I'm Bill Flederis.
And I'm Karen Stiller. So, Bill, who did you speak with today?
So I had Brenton Diaz talking with me about his work as a trauma therapist. It was super interesting. Brent works with newcomers north of Toronto, many of them who come from situations of trauma, basically, like a country where there's war or been war or that sort of thing. He drew on his experience about how he tries to help those people process some of that information or some of that experience, and then explaining that in an everyday language so that we can all understand what that is and maybe think about how we as a church or as communities can be more informed as we try to be good neighbors and loving our neighbors.
Wow. So was it, it sounds like philosophical, but also practical. Is it practical for churches to become more trauma friendly?
Yeah, exactly. Brent has a course that's free online that he has made with the Peace and Reconciliation Network. There's a link in our show notes to that churches can take to do this in a sort of a small group format where you can watch a video and then talk about it. Our discussion was really the basics. I asked him what trauma is, help us to understand it. I think there's a lot of misconceptions that people have. You know, we joke around about PTSD or,
right.
We say I tripped and it was really traumatic or something like that. And so he helps us to understand, and there's nothing wrong with doing those things, but he helps us to understand the professional way in which those terms are thought about by psychologists and therapists. And then really practical, like how can we as churches, what do we have to add to our mental framework as we try to love our neighbors and recognize that some of them might be coming with struggles and baggage that are different than what we might have ourselves?
All right. Well, sounds great, Bill. Thank you.
Brenton, I wanted to start by asking you a little bit about trauma. This is a word that we hear used a lot in our everyday life, in the media and other places. I want to give you some examples of how I've heard this word thrown around. And then I'm wondering if you can tell me how you use the word in your professional work. Sometimes I hear people using the word trauma in a kind of a flippant way, like, I ordered a chicken pizza and it came with pineapple on it. And it was so traumatic, right?
Right.
But I'm sure someone like you that's working as a trauma therapist uses it for much more serious situations when people have been, I'm guessing, people have been harmed in some way, either physically or psychologically. Heading in that direction, I'm thinking of lots of examples in our contemporary world, our contemporary society, people who have maybe served in the military, people who have been in an abusive relationship with a partner, or maybe growing up with their parent was abusive, or even in a group in society that has been oppressed or mistreated, whether it's Indigenous people historically in Canada or even today in Canada, or in a caste-based society where there's a real low rung of society that everyone looks down on and kind of mistreats. So these are some of the ideas that came to my mind when I was trying to think about trauma. And I wonder if you could just help us think about that a little bit in terms of our audience here who may have various ideas of what trauma can mean.
Sure, definitely. Well, yeah, indeed, I've heard people use the word trauma kind of in that flippant way, like you said. And not to say that when they're explaining these things, that these aren't difficult things that, you know, that they're dealing with. But there is a more technical kind of version of the term trauma, and that's what I work with every day. And even within the technical definition, there's different kinds of ways of looking at it. So, but the bottom line is that a trauma occurs when someone has experienced something that's incredibly overwhelming to their ability to cope or to deal with it. And therefore, that experience, it leaves an imprint on their bodies, on their minds, in such a way that it impacts and impedes their daily life afterwards. And the interesting thing about it is that, so like you were saying, there's all different kinds of examples, right? You can have examples where there's one situation that happened, right? It could be something like a car accident or just a one-time occurrence of abuse or something, right?
Okay,
or it could be something that's happened continuously over time, really enveloping the whole person's life, like maybe growing up in a war zone or growing up in an abusive home or something like that. And the other thing about trauma that's really interesting, I think, for people to just recognize is that a lot of it is based off of the perception of how they understand what happened to them, right, in terms of the trauma. So I guess what I'm saying is that perception is actually a big part of it. So there's a definition of trauma that I've looked at before that talks about not only, you know, the event, you know, it could be a real event that actually happened to them, but it could also be an imagined event or an anticipated event, or an event, again, that someone kind of processes in their mind as, this was really scary or this was really threatening, even if it wasn't. So, for instance, you might have someone who, there's someone that I know right now, actually, that I'm working with. Obviously, I won't say too much about them for purposes of confidentiality, but they witness a family member self-harming, actually, right?
Okay.
And they thought the family member was going to die, just the way that the event appeared, everything that was going on. But the family member is totally fine. They got hospital treatment, you know, released the same day. Everything is good. The person's actually doing much better now. But because of this image of what they saw, my actual client, it's left this imprint on them. There's nightmares, there's racing thoughts, there's flashbacks to it. And so we would say that that's a trauma, even though the event turned out totally fine, right?
Wow.
So there's different ways of looking at it, and it just really complicates things, but that's essentially what we're looking at. The other way of looking at it too is that it's a traumatic event is one, it, like I said earlier, overwhelms our ability to cope, and it's an event that we find threatening in one way or another, right? And so therefore what happens after the fact is our body is trying to protect us from this event happening again, but those kinds of reactions in our bodies lead to the symptoms that people are struggling with. That is what we're talking about when we're talking about trauma. So post-traumatic stress disorder, most of the people I work with have been officially diagnosed with that, or they definitely have some kind of history of, or like a really clear event that's impacting them in a clear way afterwards.
So when we use the word trauma, and then when we use this phrase PTSD, is the difference just that someone who's using the term PTSD, that's actually reserved for people that have been diagnosed by a psychiatrist? Is that the difference?
Yes, that's the technical piece around it, right?
Okay.
So PTSD is a diagnosis that psychiatrists and psychologists can diagnose people with. It's an actual condition that has specific criteria. But there's other people who, you know, they've experienced a really terrible event and they have a lot of the same symptoms, but not the same amount that the actual diagnosis requires. So at a place like where I work, we wouldn't turn them away. We would still work with them.
Of course.
Treat them just like as if they had the diagnosis.
And similarly, PTSD, because it's become so commonly used in our society, people also use that in a flippant way sometimes as
it's
well,
true.
Right?
They sure do, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess what I wanted us to start out with is thinking about, we have these ways that we use these kind of terms like trauma and PTSD in everyday life. And then there's the way that people who are specialists in this area, medical people and counselors and that, use it in a kind of a more specialized way. And that's okay. I think we just need to be careful that we're talking the same conversation, right?
For sure. Yeah, definitely.
So help me understand then the lasting effects of what you would officially call trauma or PTSD. So something bad might happen to me and I feel like I've kind of gotten over it. So what's the difference between that and someone who has some kind of a longer lasting effect from the thing that's happened to them? How do we understand other people? I think sometimes it would be easy for me to say, well, I had this really bad thing happen to me. I got over it.
Yeah.
And look at me today. I'm doing fine.
Right.
And this other person, the same thing happened to them, but they're still struggling with it. And I don't get that. And so that makes me have less compassion or empathy on them. I think maybe they're being lazy or they're not trying hard enough or something. So
sure.
Can you help us just think through that? How can that be different for different people? And what are those kind of long-lasting effects that we're talking about that people need help with?
Yeah, it's like, how much time do we have, right? Like, I could talk all day for hours. But in a nutshell, yeah, people have different thresholds for... And it's not a matter of strength or weakness or good or bad or right decisions or wrong decisions even, but people do have different thresholds for what they can tolerate and what they can endure. Some of it's actually embedded in culture. It's pretty amazing working with people from around the world, because there are going to be some people who can tolerate, honestly, like violence and things like this in ways that in Canada we would be shocked at, you know, generally speaking. So
right.
There's all kinds of different factors that lead to people have different tolerances for these kinds of things. And like I said earlier, the perception of what happened too, right? Like, there could be someone else who had the same experience as the example I gave earlier, and they'd be like, fine, like, oh, okay, my family member's fine now. Everything is good. No problem. Whereas the client who I'm working with, who's actually a very strong individual, they're not okay with it right now, right? So again, certainly in our sort of therapeutic trauma world, we don't judge people for their reactions. We just understand that, hey, you know, people have different thresholds. People have different things that they can tolerate. And everybody's body is different. And it's not a matter of being weak or strong.
Wow. That's an amazing insight. I think that's really important for us to have in our mind, I guess, as we're trying to be Christians and to love our neighbor, really, right?
Yeah.
Like, to recognize that God made everybody different and that people have had different I don't know, different experiences that lead them to be at a certain level of being able to cope with trauma, right?
Exactly, yeah. We all have different resources and, you know, different areas where maybe we're a little vulnerable. I think that hopefully that extends the empathy that we can show to each other. In terms of like what trauma actually looks like for people, like what experiencing trauma and what their lives look like, I mean, there's a few different themes that come up for people. One of them would be anxiety. There's no other way of putting it, right?
Just okay, yeah.
Having a really heightened anxiety that really impairs personal interactions with other people, that impairs their ability to work, their ability to function, just because, again, their body is so revved up and kind of on alert, you know, trying to like stave off any possibility of getting hurt again. That's just sort of where their body's conditioned to be. And so the work that I do with people is to help them kind of relax that a little bit, learn how to manage that better, and hopefully lower that anxiety that's related to what's happened to them. So that's a big theme. Of course, a lot of people have problems with their decision-making and their relationships as a result. And for a lot of people too, I mean, depending on the trauma and what's happened, it could be just a really devastating thing that's happened that's really changed their lives. So there's a lot of grief and mourning that's involved as well. Obviously, the people that I work with, many of them have had to flee their homelands and come here due to the trauma that they're experiencing, right? So every moment of their lives that they're living in Canada, they're reminded like, okay, I'm here in this country now because of what happened, right? So it's a hard thing to kind of cope and deal with. It's something that really impacts their life in the course of what's happened to them. In a nutshell, those are some of the major themes. I mean, some people also struggle with symptoms that we would call depression, right? They're really sad, they're really down, low energy. And then for more extreme cases, there's other symptoms as well that pop up for people that are just, again, really impairing in terms of their mental health and their ability to function in society.
Okay, so let's talk about at the community level. You mentioned people that have come maybe as immigrants or migrants from another country where maybe some really bad things happened that led them to flee that country and come to Canada. To me, that's like outside my experience, right?
Yeah.
So how do I, as a Christian, or maybe me and some of my friends who are in a church, how do we add that to our toolbox in terms of being able to understand or imagine what that's like? Or maybe not even that, but how can we be loving to those people as a community? Can you give us some thoughts on that?
Sure. I think sometimes I'll speak for myself. I could see myself overthinking it in a way, right?
Okay.
Well, you know, the idea is that what people really need, like what a lot of people who've experienced trauma, and especially the refugee newcomer population, is they're isolated. They don't really have people in their lives, a lot of them. They might be kind of constrained to just being with their community, if there is one, because sometimes people are coming over and there isn't even, like, their community isn't even represented locally or anything. Their ethnic community, I mean. So just befriending them, being a source of encouragement. I have found that the people I've worked with have been just so gracious and so excited just to have someone in their life who actually cares. Someone here in Canada who is taking the time to listen to them. We don't have to understand everything about what's happened to them, right? But, you know, we at least, again, extend that kindness, extend that love and hospitality to them. I guess see the human in them. We allow them to extend hospitality to us too when they offer. So just things like that can be a huge, huge piece. Obviously, too, there are people who need just practical supports, maybe help with housing or figuring out where to get shoes or a jacket or whatever, right? Depending on their situation in Canada here. So just helping out with practical needs can also be super helpful. But yeah, I just find that being that loving presence and helping the person to kind of establish a sense of community here is just so nurturing for their, not only for their mental health, but also for their souls, right? In terms of being in the church. So I think that's the big piece. And I found that, again, it's not really anything too complex, believe it or not, despite the complexities they faced.
Yeah.
It really is just about just saying, okay, Lord, like, help me to just love this person like I would love them, you know, anybody else or anybody else in need, right?
Yep.
And not being afraid to approach them and to talk and to befriend them. It's tough. I think sometimes, like, part of the overthinking is that, oh, here's someone different. We don't want to offend them. We don't want to trigger them. Am I even going to understand them or relate to them? Do they even want to talk to someone like me? I think just like with anybody, all we can really do is just at least put ourselves out there, offer. You know, they'll let us know if it's not really something that they're interested in. But I think you'll be surprised at how many newcomers or and refugees type folks are excited to, again, to have someone who actually cares.
Well, that's really freeing. So we don't need to have a separate mental category where we think, you know, I can love this neighbor. They've been in Canada forever, and I just see them as being the same as me. And then we don't have to have the separate category of traumatized newcomers or whatever that we need to treat in some majorly different way. It's still the same basic following the commands of Jesus to love our neighbor and care for our neighbor and right. be there long term for them and try and help them in the ways that we can. That's what I hear you saying.
Exactly. Yeah. Certainly, you know, I'm thinking like as lay people and stuff like that, that's definitely the case. It might get a little different when you're thinking about, you know, establishing programs or wanting to specifically as a church reach out to people. Like it would be good to have some kind of knowledge or training or something in trauma just to understand some of those pieces a little bit more.
So what would a church do if they thought, you know, we have a newcomer community that comes from a traumatized country or like a country that's had really bad things happen to them? How would a church who feels compassion and wants to help, how would they take those first couple of steps that are done properly that anticipate that there's some special trauma here that might need to be dealt with?
Definitely, yeah.
I guess what I heard you saying is calling in some kind of experts. Is that kind of what you're...
Oh, well, I don't know. Yeah, or some kind of consideration of these pieces one way or another. So there's a church that I know of, and they recognized that there was a local community of folks from the Horn of Africa. And it's like they're just a community of them. They're all newly arrived refugees from, you know, kind of like a war-torn place. And the church is interested in like, hey, these are people in our midst. We should reach out to them, right? And so they started this. It's amazing. They started this ministry of reaching out to them, and the people were so receptive. They started coming to the church. But then they started like talking to people at the church, I mean, and tell them about what they went through. And the church was like, whoa, wait a second. This is like intense stuff. Like they've been through war. Some of them are struggling with their mental health. And so what the church did was they reached out and they were able to provide a session on trauma, like just an information session by the actual refugee community, which is amazing, as well as like some of the key leaders in the church and some of the people in the church who are interested in ministering to them. And so it opened up conversations, and they're able to kind of talk about these things and discuss them. And then the church worked to figure out what the referral pathways were for people, right? For people who needed support in their mental health. So figuring out what the resources are, who to call about different situations, and maybe just having like a consultant that they could ask about some of these pieces when they weren't sure. Now, obviously, I said earlier, oh, it's just as simple as being a friend. And it is, but you know, at the same time, there might be sensitivities that people have, but it's the same way we would treat a friend, right? So if a friend from Ukraine or a friend from some other place is like, listen, I don't want to talk about the war, we don't keep going there and asking about it, right? So we're sensitive that way. And it's a whole approach is called the trauma-informed approach. So kind of applying those principles of letting the person choose what they want to talk about, not doing things specifically that you know are going to be triggering or upsetting for them, and kind of keeping it on the level that they're comfortable with. Just being sensitive to those pieces is also something that the church members or the church can kind of get trained in or look into, at least, just to be more sensitive.
I can imagine that would be a very great blessing that a church could offer to their community if they're able to think and talk about that together. So it sounds like it's being intentional is like half the battle, right? Is just being aware that this is something to keep in mind and, yeah, look for.
And again, I think the idea too of like, here is a stranger maybe in our midst, maybe, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of churches where there's already people who have the refugee experience, you know, and they're just at church and they've just been able to manage and figure it out, and they're church communities embrace them in whatever way. So there might even be resources within a lot of local churches that already know, like, you've already lived this. It's just a matter of tapping into those resources a little bit more intentionally, as you're saying.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a matter of kind of, you know, noticing who's around, who's in the community, or maybe even being intentional about sponsoring people and then providing the support for those people, just loving them the way that you would love anybody. And I think that you would see the results for sure.
So as a layperson, I'm loving my neighbor and we've got a relationship of trust, and there are some things that they're struggling with from their past, and they open up to me and tell me a little bit about that, and I can see that they're distressed and I'm trying to be a good listener, but I feel like maybe they need some kind of extra help or specialized help. How do I reach the point of recognizing that? And then can I say to them, have you thought about, I don't know, seeking professional help? Or should I find an agency in my city first and then say, you know, I know this place? Do you know what you would do in a situation like that, or what an average person could do in a situation like that?
Yeah, we get these kinds of inquiries all the time from folks, actually. So there's different ways of approaching it. First of all, how would you assess that a person needs help? I think there's going to be people, like trauma, for instance, it has kind of different levels of impact, like anything.
Okay.
Well, there's going to be some people who, yeah, they've been through the war, they've been through the abuse or whatever, and it's a part of their story, a part of their life. There's times when they think about it, it is not pleasant, but they're able to manage and cope with it. So they might be sharing about it, right? Like, oh, I have this past, and, you know, it comes up from time to time. But I think when the idea is that when it's coming up so much that it's really impairing the person's life, it's beyond their abilities to really cope or manage or deal with it in a really positive way, that, you know, that you could broach the question of whether or not seeking professional help is something that they would think about. One thing that makes it complicating for the newcomer populations is a lot of these people come from areas of the world where accounting's not a thing.
Oh, okay.
It's a very new kind of a thing. So you kind of have to explain a little bit about what that is and what it entails. So this is a person you talk to, it's professional. Usually you can say, oh, it's kind of like a doctor who takes care of, you know, matters like this. And that's what a lot of people refer to me as. Oh, Dr. Brent, even though I'm not a doctor at all. Like, okay, I understand that it's the cultural piece. And so I just roll with it.
Yeah.
So anyway, so you might have that conversation with people depending on the person. And then, yeah, surely you could look up services if you like, or you can work with the person to find services. Or there might just be one key person that you ask, maybe like a church leader. If this is a church context we're talking about, they might have some awareness around some pieces. And so that would be another thing, I guess, not to put too much on church leaders, but just for them to kind of be aware of the social network that's out there in terms of services, and to just become a little bit familiar with them. And if they have questions, they're welcome to call the services. Like, services would love to hear from churches, actually, and just to, you know, connect and collaborate just to see what they offer. And then that way you have something ready to hand to the person. But if not, it's something that you can explore together, right?
Yeah.
And I also would say, too, for the person that is supporting someone who has trauma, like, I wouldn't want you to feel too burdened by this. I mean, obviously, if this is your friend, you're going to feel burdened and sad by it. But I don't want you to be overwhelmed, too, right? So if something feels really beyond your capacity to understand or deal with or help with, then by all means, you're doing the loving thing for the person and yourself by, you know, having them to work with someone else who could maybe have the skills to deal with that in a better way.
I can imagine that if it's a cross-cultural situation, there's also a little bit complicated in the sense of, you know, you might come from a we don't talk about our feelings kind of culture.
Yeah.
And then your friend, your new friend, might come from a culture where they talk all the time about right. their feelings.
Right.
And so for you, it might feel like, wow, they really have an overwhelming lot of emotions and this is really, really hard for them.
Right.
But for them, it's not a problem because that's just the kind of culture that they're coming exactly. from, right? There's a bit of discernment involved there too, I can imagine, in a lot of those situations.
There is, yeah. You know, lean in the Holy Spirit to help you, give you guidance yeah. in those moments, right? But it's true. Sometimes that cultural piece, it can go the other way too. Like, there's cultures
yeah.
that don't express their feelings the way that Canadians do. Believe it or not, even though Canadians are relatively reserved, there's other cultures that are even more kind of like, we don't show what we're feeling to anybody. And so, yeah, we're curious, like, doesn't that bother you? And they'll say no. And once you get to know a person and you become a friend, you figure some of those pieces out and they'll divulge to you what's really going on. But yeah, it does take some, you know, it's like anything, getting to know someone, figuring out the dynamics, building a relationship, and then noticing when something's not quite right with them.
Yeah, I think I'm sure every friend has their culture, whether they're from a non-Canadian culture or even just a different subculture within Canada.
For sure, yeah.
So one of the things that I know about you is you helped to put together a course that people can take. It's called Trauma Friendly Church, and it's a self-directed course with some videos that people can watch and some questions that they can ask each other as a way for Christians and churches in particular to kind of learn about these things and reflect on these things and talk about them together. I think it's a really neat course, and we'll be sure to put a link to it in the notes from this podcast, this show, so that people who are interested can click it and go to look at it. So I was skimming through that course and looking through it, and one of the things I saw was a section where you talked about listening non-judgmentally. And I thought that was a really interesting kind of idea or concept or whatever. So I wondered if you could just share a little bit with us about what does that mean and how do we practice that? And why is that important in the situation of someone who maybe has a trauma history?
Sure. Yeah. Again, I could talk about all this forever. Okay. So people who have experienced trauma, depending on the trauma, depending on what happened, a lot of them do experience quite a bit of shame, right? Like if you think about things like sexual assault, sexual abuse in some way, a lot of time there's shame involved there. There also is a lot of kind of lack of trust and maybe even self-judgment that is embedded for things like political violence too, for people who've experienced that, or the trauma itself or how they deal with it or cope with it, or the symptoms they're ashamed of, even if the trauma itself was relatively, you know, not shameful in their eyes, they might still not like the way that their bodies or their minds have reacted to it. They might be really embarrassed by it. So to provide a space where someone is able to share and talk about these things a little bit, or just kind of be themselves in front of someone, but no, without being judged for it, without having that shame kind of, you know, directed towards them again, or that stigma directed towards them, is so therapeutically important and just so helpful. I think Jesus kind of modeled some of these pieces truthfully, you know, when, now of course, okay, it's complicated, but you know, when the woman was brought before him, the, you know, the adulterous woman, and the religious leaders threw her down, and like, you know, he does the whole thing where he says, "He who is without sin cast the first stone," kind of thing. And he restores her, right? He listened to her. He understood the situation. Obviously, he knew her sin. So that's why I'm saying it's complicated. But just that approach of being open to someone, seeing the person behind what happened, and then in his case, offering her a chance to move forward in her life, you know, in a more scriptural way. I think that that's kind of like an example for us a lot of times, right? Like just to listen to people, be open, be loving, and to not cast that judgment like those religious leaders did in that Bible account, but instead seeing the person behind what's going on and trying to figure out the understanding of what's happening here to this person, or what has happened to this person that's led them to feel this way. So yeah, how do you do that? I mean, we're going to have judgments when you listen to people. I mean, it's just natural human being stuff. So I think, again, it's about being intentional. It's about trying to understand their frame of mind and where they're coming from. Try to understand, at least understand kind of the logic sort of behind why they're reacting the way that they're reacting. Just understanding that trauma has an impact on people and it causes people to do things that on surface might seem strange, but when you think about it, it actually makes sense. So for instance, just another example, there's someone I'm working with right now. I don't know how weird this is going to sound to everybody, but he was abused by teachers in his home country and the teachers happen to be women. So now he's come to Canada. He's been living here for a while and he has a real aversion to women.
He
does not want to be around them. People could interpret that as, oh, he's a chauvinist pig, or oh, he whatever, right? But when you stop and you listen to him and you try to figure out where he's coming from, you realize, oh, okay, it actually makes a lot of sense. And it's not something he's happy with. He does want to change the way that he views things and he wants to build better relationships with women and stuff. But he's like, I really struggle because of that trauma. And, you know, he's been hurt by so many women in his life that this just seems to be his go-to attitude as a way to defend himself from further abuse,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So again, maybe to a lot of ears that would seem strange, like, what, this guy, he must be a sexist or something. But no, there's a really understandable reason why. And I think if you listen to him and listen to the person behind what is being said, you can get to the heart of what's happening.
And another thing I saw in your course, I think it fits right here perfectly, is you talk about this word empathy. And there's a line where it says in the notes, empathy is not necessarily feeling what other people feel, but communicating to them that they are heard and understood.
Right.
So even if I don't fully understand this person that you're talking about, even if I don't fully understand what that would be like, I can still tell them that I hear what they're saying. And at some level, I understand what they're saying, even if I can't totally put myself in their shoes.
Exactly.
For me, I thought that was really cool, because when I think of the word empathy, I always think of, well, you have to totally be able to put yourself in someone other's shoes to be empathetic. And what your notes are saying here is you don't actually have to go that far. You just have to say, I hear you and I understand you. Am I getting that right?
Exactly. Yeah, you explained it well. I feel like we can't really put ourselves in the shoes of people. I mean, I do a lot of traveling just with the various consulting and teaching that I do. People are just living completely different lives in completely different contexts, completely different cultures, and they've had completely different experiences. Well, not only that, but even here in Canada, you know, than what I've had. And I can imagine pieces of it, right? But I can't understand it fully, right? There's just never a way that I'm going to be able to. But I can sit down with someone and I can listen to them, and I can convey to them that, okay, I'm hearing you. I'm hearing what you're saying. I get like what you're saying makes sense. I can understand where you're coming from. I can understand why you would feel this way, you know, based off of what's happened in your life and what you've told me. And just, again, to have someone listen in that way and say those things and validate the thoughts you're having or the feelings that you're feeling, even if the person doesn't fully get it, again, is just so beautiful. I think that a lot of the work that I do is really just that, right? Like, a lot of times people are facing situations that I just don't have any answers for. Like, I don't have any answers as a Christian or not a Christian, right? Like,
yep,
people have just dealt with incredible loss, incredible tragedy, and are facing really hard times now. And all I can do is just listen and say, wow, like, I hear you, that's terrible, and kind of mourn and grieve with them about what's happened. And at the end of the day, they're like, thank you so much. This was so helpful. You know, like this session means so much to me. You've helped me in such deep ways. And I'm thinking, all I did was just listen. Like, I really didn't do anything else. But that space is kind of rare in these days for us to have, like all of us, I think. So,
yeah. And I think our natural inclination is always to try to put someone else's story into our own story.
Love.
So I think it's really freeing to have this broader definition of empathy, because I feel like I could say to someone, I hear you, and there's logic in what you're saying. My first instinct would be to say, well, I wouldn't have done that in your situation,
sure,
right? Or that's not how I would have responded. But if I can tamp that down and I can say, I see how that's affected you, I see the logic of that, and just stop there, I think that's the helpful part, right?
Exactly. Yeah, that's it. So it takes us to kind of turn off, not that we, you know, we have our values that are really important to us. Sometimes, you know, based on scripture that might be coming up, and you're kind of evaluating what's being said and listening closely. But you're right, like, in terms of our reaction, in terms of what we're saying with the person, if you're just wanting to just listen and provide this empathy to them, then yeah, it's kind of like just keeping that locked down for a little bit and then listening and trying to find the logic or the, you know, what makes sense for that person and what their perspective is. And then there are a lot of times there's a lot of really interesting things that come up that just really make sense in the long run. And then you can offer maybe your support in other ways, like offering a little bit of advice, or if they're asking for direction on something, you can kind of provide your perspective. And a lot of times, honestly, people will ask you for your point of view. And especially as a friend, it's totally okay to share that, right? But I would do it just carefully, just saying, hey, this is the way I see things. You know, I'm not saying you have to do it this way because I haven't lived the life you've lived. But I wonder if thinking about this would be helpful.
Wow, super. Well, I want to say thank you, Brenton. This has been really educational for me, and I hope that it has been for the people that joined us for this. Maybe we could wrap it up. I'm wondering if you could just kind of share a word of encouragement with our audience about what they can take away from our discussion. Is there something that they can be praying about or thinking about, or actually action steps that they might take to try to add this concept of trauma into how they show love to the people around them?
Sure. So, yeah, I think the first thing would be, don't be afraid of trauma. It's easy for me to say, I know. So it's an encouragement to try to approach it not out of fear or like, oh my goodness, these are the untouchable people, right? Sure, it can sound overwhelming. There can be things going on for people who have really struggled that do need sort of professional attention. But we can be supports and friends to people who've been, in fact, we probably already are. Trauma is actually very common in our society, in our world. So don't be afraid of it. Don't be afraid to reach out to people who are struggling with these things or who might appear different than us, especially if they're new to the country or something. Just show that love that you'd want to show if you were in a difficult situation. If you've had the experience of being an immigrant, you know what it's like, perhaps, to not have any friends or not have any support system around you, and you're dealing with figuring out all this stuff of the new country all on your own. So just maybe, you know, put yourself in their shoes a little bit, as much as you can kind of imagine, and try to anticipate what they would want and what they would need. Sometimes it's just a friend to talk to, a friend to share a tea or coffee with, just to talk about the weather. And sometimes that makes the biggest difference. And honestly, what I'm saying, I know it sounds really simplistic, but there's all kinds of research that backs it up too, right? That building that social network, that social support, is one of the most therapeutic things that we can do for people. So you, by doing that, not only are you just being an amazing friend and I think carrying out a lot of what Jesus intended for us to do, but we can back it up with research too to show you that, hey, like, you're actually building this person and helping them to point towards healing for their trauma in a therapeutic way. I think that'd be my encouragement. Yeah, let's demystify this a bit and reach out. It would take us stepping out of our own sort of world to do that sometimes, right? Being curious about people, maybe putting ourselves in situations that feel a little uncomfortable at first, but I can guarantee you that for certainly the vast majority of times, it'll be met with someone who's just really grateful to hear from you and we're really grateful for your support, and you end up getting a lifelong friend as a result.
Oh, thank you, Brenton. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for listening to this intentionally ad-free podcast. Find out more about the EFC's research and how you can support it with a donation at the EFC.ca/research.